Pisces, and welcome to Somewhere in Between video readings. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for now, for the next hour or so, here with some details about your 2024 astrology. This is my second reading in the series. I began with Aries this morning. I am planning to work my way backwards in the fashion that I learned from Alice Bailey to work the zodiac in the direction of the soul's progress. So that would mean Aries, then back from Pisces to Taurus. But so far, I'm planning to skip Aquarius. So that may or may not affect you, but I'll get to Aquarius at the end after I already know everything for now. I'm up to Pisces. I'm here in the Astrology Chalet in Rosendale, New York, where I have come to find a little bit of quiet without the street in front of me, protests, fire engines, and, you know, delivery trucks coming and running their engines. An environment much more suited to this type of contemplative work. And I'm here to tell you a bit about your 2024 astrology. I'm not basing this on the written readings. I haven't even reviewed the written reading, so it's going to be as close to a fresh reading of the chart, having done it a few times and worked on it. But I'm just going sui sponte without any notes except for this chart. This is the simplified, abbreviated version of your chart. You have a version of that with your written reading. And I'll probably add some more notes, may issue a second set of these things. And then there is the more complicated version. You can see all that's going on right there. That is focusing in on what's happening in Aquarius, Pisces, and there's Pluto. Aquarius, Pisces, and Aries and Taurus. So there's this concentration of energies that looks a little bit like this. Let's make a note on here. So, with Pisces kind of in the middle of it all, sandwiched in, most of the action is taking place right in this sector of the sky. There's this very unusual concentration. That goes here. It includes Aquarius, the sign before yours, 12th house, Pisces, Aries, the sign after yours. Those two signs are very important in astrology, the ones immediately before and immediately after, and there's a lot going on in those two signs, which are in effect extensions of Pisces. Aquarius to one side, Aries to the other side, and those two have been working in this kind of energy loop for years. Really quite an impressive show to have this harmonization between Aries and Aquarius, basically both expressing the same themes. Okay, and then Taurus, the scene of a major conjunction involving the ruler of Pisces, Jupiter, and then Gemini. Important stuff going on in Cancer, but not quite like, not quite on that level. I'll get to a bit of what's going on in Cancer, because it may have a bearing on things. But for the moment, let's work those few signs. All the signs affect all the other signs. That's one of the main theories that distinguishes my work from that of other astrologists, and it's why I can do a reading based on the solar chart, which does not need your birth time or date, but rather is the chart for the sign Pisces. And in the chart for the sign Pisces, we start with Pisces. That's a good place to start. And this is a very activated part of the sky right now, very important sign for everyone, because Pisces is where humans, the things that Pisces represent, is where humans find relief and escape from the grind of life. All of the things in Pisces can be described as I'm still learning how to use this camera system, so please thank you for your patience. I thought I'd put a little more light on the subject. This camera seems to eat light. Pisces is where we find relief from the hard-edged life of day-to-day experience. Life is challenging. We are constantly running up against boundaries. We're constantly running up against limitations. It is difficult to be an earthling on this planet. There are constant challenges. There's the constant need to be dealing with one authority figure or the next. It never seems to end. And Pisces is where we go for respite. It's where we go to escape. It's where we find things like music and dreaming and art and the best sex and the imagination. It is probably the most interior of the signs. It is where we seek our inner refuge. The inner refuge right now is rather under siege by digital conditions, and I'm going to talk a lot about the spiritual nature of digital conditions in this reading and all of the readings going forward. I don't mean to be giving a class in media theory, but this is media theory applied to the spiritual crisis of our times, which is completely induced by overexposure to digital conditions and feeling like you're spied on by all the cameras you didn't put in front of you voluntarily to speak to the people that you love, but rather are being stalked by these cameras and facial recognition and our emails being read by robots and possibly by people, and it's quite a ridiculous scene. And that interior space represented by Pisces is being invaded. It's being turned inside out all the time, and it is a challenging and difficult situation for all of us to be in. And as a Pisces, you particularly need to have your way of getting out of the dominant consciousness of all of this pressure and responsibility. I mean, it's one reason why the sign Pisces is associated with various forms of escapism, including drinking and drugs and all of this stuff. But what Pisces really needs is pleasure. Pisces needs to have fun. Pisces needs to indulge its Dionysian side and its need for escape. To have that without messing up the rest of your, you know, the balance of your life requires boundaries. So when we consider what's going on in Pisces, there's this interesting interplay between Neptune in Pisces, which has been around now for since about 2011. Incredibly. I mean, I remember Neptune going across Aquarius. It seemed like it was taking forever. And now Neptune in Pisces is almost done. And that's one of the elements of big news this year. It is not done this year, but it is toward the end of the year, particularly in transition into Aries. It goes all the way out to the last degree of Pisces. And what this phase in your life has been about is challenges maintaining boundaries. It's been about its challenges holding space open for yourself to have a kind of place where you can confidently let your guard down. Neptune famously dissolves boundaries, and it makes it difficult to have physical boundaries. One of the first things I observed working with a lot of clients in the 1990s was I had a number of clients who were born with Neptune rising. Now, a lot of really good musicians have Neptune rising. I think Paul McCartney has Neptune rising. David Bowie might have Neptune rising. I'm not sure about that, but it is a mark of inspiration. But what I noticed was that these clients almost always had broken locks. So whatever inspiration they may have been drawing from Neptune in Pisces, they were also experiencing the phenomenon of broken locks. And I literally mean front doors that didn't lock and bedroom doors that didn't latch and bathroom doors. I don't know how I got on the subject. It may have been in one of the early sessions where I just had an intuitive hit. I mean, this happens in astrology reading. You don't know why you said something. And then it's like, yeah, in fact, my bedroom door doesn't latch and the front door to my house is broken. And I'm like, call the locksmith. So I started to see the pattern here. And this is a metaphor. Call the locksmith is a metaphor. It's also a literal thing to fix your doors and remind yourself to make sure that all your doors latch. And those are spiritual doors as well as mental doors. Now, coming along to help you with that project is Saturn entering Pisces last year. So now we're in the peak year of Saturn in Pisces. So the Saturn in Aquarius era was essentially what we think of as the COVID era. The 2020 crisis was propagated by an event in Capricorn, which was Saturn conjunct Pluto in Capricorn. A 9/11-like aspect. 9/11 aspect with Saturn opposite Pluto. Saturn conjunct Pluto essentially created the same thing, only on a much larger, wider scale in society. And then Saturn quickly moved to Aquarius and went through your 12th house. That's going to come up when we get to Pluto in a moment. Now, Saturn's in Pisces. This is very helpful. There are some of us Pisces who are not going to find this to be at all pleasant. We're not going to find this to be helpful. We're not going to find this to have that pressure of Saturn saying, clean up the edges, clean up your boundaries. But it is here to help you do that. It is here to answer all that Neptune in Pisces has kind of stirred up and churned up, and the mysteries and the challenges and the difficulties of Neptune in Pisces for now well over a decade, right? This is 11, it comes in at 11, 12, and now it's going out in 24, 25. So Saturn is here to help you. It is here to help you have the maturity that it will take to be able to have the life that you want to have. So I would strongly suggest, though it may be challenging to make a lot of personal changes, let Saturn guide you to making those changes. Let Saturn guide you to be free. I'm always reassured by the words of Patrick Walker, the person who showed me that astrology is real. Fritz Perls said, learning is learning that something is possible. Patrick Walker taught me that it's possible for astrology to be real, meaningful, and helpful. And Patrick said, Saturn always gives more than it takes away. So if you feel like you have to give up things, certain patterns of your life, certain things you've come to know that are familiar, including how you perceive yourself, helps on the way to liberate you from those patterns. There's a third, and one last thing before, and I'm going to keep coming back to this probably. Saturn will, Saturn is a 29-year orbit, Neptune is like 146 years. So when Saturn's moving in on Neptune, which it is, that's Saturn, that's Neptune, that little H is Saturn, the conjunction, that's Nessus. I'll come back to that in one second. The conjunction is going to happen, but it's not going to happen in Pisces. So Saturn is catching up with Neptune. But the conjunction's going to happen in Aries. A lot of the action is shifting to Aries. Aries is a very important sign for Pisces because it's the sign of your resources, including your money, your talents, and your self-esteem. And starting very soon, there's going to be major action in Aries that lasts clear into 2027 or so. So I'm going to spend a lot of time in Aries today. So you have the added stability that Saturn offers to support you while Neptune is here. So for as long as Neptune's going to be in Pisces, Saturn's going to be in Pisces as well. And they're both going to move into Aries at the same time. This is a very powerful point of synthesis. There is another factor in Pisces. That goes back to around 2014. I left my ephemeris for it on the coffee table over there. Nessus is an ultra-slow mover. It's a centaur planet like Chiron. It is one of the first three centaurs, and these are worth studying. There's a fabulous book by Melanie Reinhart called To the Edge and Beyond that talks about the relationship of the first three centaurs and Chiron and Saturn together. Nessus is the centaur that deals with consequences. Nessus is the centaur that addresses the cycle of karma in its completion. And with Nessus in your sign, there is a lot of pressure to take responsibility for all that you see and feel and do and all the choices that you make. The times we're living in are times where the only real symbols of status are essentially money, preferably if earned very quickly, fame, particularly if for nothing special, and being a victim. I'm very sad to have to report this news, but we were previously living in times when talent mattered. Now talent doesn't matter. Now we suddenly, people are getting the idea that we're going to be happy with art made by generative AI. We're not going to be happy. No Pisces should be happy to have any concept of art made by anything other than the human endurance of the experience of being on the planet. We survived it, and the result is a song. But the victim trip has really gotten intense. And it is a complete cop-out for taking responsibility for one's life. It is easy to provoke a drama, a legal drama, a moral drama, a panic of any kind by invoking victimhood. And we are given examples over and over and over again of people getting the two things they think they need the most, which is validation, thing one, and power. Makes you powerful to be a victim for a minute. Then you're a fucking victim. This is Nessus. And Pisces has that quality of, it's kind of like this residual victimhood. And, you know, Pisces is the delta of the zodiac. All the karma flows to Pisces. Part of doing Pisces second and Taurus last is to shift that reality. And by the way, this is the harder direction to travel. This is like doing the dog paddle upstream of the zodiac to go backwards. So, Melanie Reinhart, my beloved friend and one of the most brilliant delineators of new discoveries ever, gives Nessus the key phrase, "The buck stops here." And so you will be happy when you live your life in a way that the buck stops with you. You want to be the one who takes responsibility for your existence, and you want to be the one who takes responsibility for the decisions that you make. This is the jeopardy and the reward of getting to be in a body, in this place, in this beautiful place we live, with all of its difficulties, fraught with all of its crisis and all of its problems. Being here is the reward. Being here is the challenge. And being here is the opportunity to grow and to become. And this is all about taking responsibility for your choices. And that is the message of Nessus. And one of the most unusual things happening in 2024 is happening in your sign, which is that maybe you can see it in this chart. I have no idea how this. I'm looking at a 1-inch computer screen, and it seems to be backwards. That's Saturn. The little blue thing is Nessus. Saturn. Nessus. Saturn's catching up with Nessus too. It's not as clear to see in this chart, but these are with your written reading. And so before Saturn closes in on Neptune, Saturn is closing in on Nessus. And this will be a bit of a catharsis for you no matter what. And it may be a time when you feel like very inspired to rise to the occasion of Melanie Reinhart's key phrase, "The buck stops here." That's the key phrase of Nessus. And my assessment is, and maybe I am being optimistic or Pollyannish, is that there's a very close conjunction, not exact, but very close, in July. And we're going to see some kind of reckoning of the victim trip, this obsession with the victim trip. There has to be some reckoning with this. It is completely out of control. It is, if you think that mass shootings are bad, multiply that karma by millions of the people who are involved in moral mass shootings, because they have to blame someone for everything that they choose and everything that they do. And so the Saturn-Nessus conjunction, which takes place first in July of 24, then in February of 25, that where it's exact, for the one and only time. So there's a near miss in July, within 1 degree, and then there's an exact conjunction in February where it completes the cycle and crosses over it. That's the time. This interval that we are in, starting from this minute, now that you know of this, is the time to get a handle on this issue. You don't really want, I mean, since this is not therapy, I can say things like this. If it was therapy, I couldn't really say things like this, but it's an astrology reading. I don't think you or anyone wants to be able to just blame everyone for everything that happens to you. To blame everyone else for every decision that you make. And this includes sexual decisions. Might as well bring this up now, since it's in the it's emerged from the Ritu. Tell me if this theme is not incredibly apropos of our moment. In the myth of Nessus, which is the myth of a river crossing, there is a sex scene in the myth, as there are in many Greek myths. But usually in the Greek myths, we get some idea of what the scene is about. Is it a rape? Is it consensual? Question mark. It's usually fairly clear. in the myth of Nessus, there is a sex scene, and in the from the translation out of Greek, as best I know of this from Melanie Reinhardt and Robert von Heeren, who did the initial delineation of Nessus, and whom I've tutored with personally, both the scene in the Nessus myth involves a mythical figure named Deianira, who is the wife of Heracles, who somehow pawns Deianira off on this centaur with a sketchy reputation whose name is Nessus. Nessus is a river keeper. He keeps the crossing of the river. He's a horse, man, very large. I think these centaurs are supposed to be way bigger than normal horses. But even if it's a normal horse, that's pretty big. And during this river crossing, Deianira and Nessus have a sexual encounter. And it is left ambiguous in the myth whether the sexual encounter was an exchange for the river crossing, whether it was consensual, let's fuck and have fun, or whether it was rape. Those are three very divergent possibilities, but they are the only three possibilities that there are. Sex as commodity, sex as choice, sex as something taken. The presence of Nessus by itself, combined with the presence of Saturn, leaning on Nessus, is saying, you must clarify these things for yourself. This cannot be left up to any kind of a sketchy thing where maybe it was that, or maybe it was that, maybe it was that on Saturday, maybe it's that on Sunday. While there is not an intoxicating substance in the myth, there is one in the immediate previous chapter, Aetholus. That's where the bottle, the big cask of wine is opened and the centaurs all come and there's a big war. So the hint is there. The implication is there, that there is an intoxicant involved. And when I make these readings, I don't know if I'm talking to somebody 22 years old with a Tinder account, or whether I'm talking to somebody 75 years old who's absolutely not interested in sex at all. So, be that as it may, this Saturn-Nessus conjunction is saying you must clarify the distinctions between the three motives or three causes of a sexual encounter. Voluntary choice, trade as a commodity, which is a form of involuntary choice, and something taken against your will. And I am sad to say that society has entered a point in history where this has not only become a gray area, but the gray area is being exploited. And it's handy to exploit it, but the karma comes back. The karma comes back. Okay, that's what's going on in Pisces. Next sign is Aries. You're very fortunate to have Aries as your second place. Second house. I use the words house and place interchangeably after Rob Hand. Where you have Aries in your natal chart or in your solar chart is, in my reading, where you seek to actualize yourself. This is very handy for Pisces to have Aries in the second place, because it means that you are going to find yourself as a kind of a factor and as a kind of a function of your true worth. That's very, very important to you. And being a Pisces, you know some of the self-esteem issues that Pisces have to live with. You know that it's not easy to be a Pisces because you can undervalue your own worth and compensate for that in various ways that are not so wholesome. You've had Chiron moving through this region of your chart now for well, it made the transition from 2018 to 2019, and then been in Aries steadily since spring of 2019. So there was some of this in 2018, and then 2019 forward. This has really called the question of your self-worth, your self-value, your self-esteem, not only as a psychological issue, not only as some kind of theoretical issue, but rather as a matter of your most basic spiritual health. Chiron always points to matters of wounding and healing, and Chiron points to matters of wholeness and of personality integration. And you're having this work out in your sign of self-esteem. Now, it may seem like old news that Chiron entered Pisces in 2018 and 2019, and now I'm talking about it today like it's something real special. That's because it is something real special. I want my Aries charts. I've got my Aries charts. So the big chart, Pluto entering Aquarius is special. But the big chart of the year is what I'm calling the All-American Eclipse. Ta-da, there it is. Here's my sketchy version. And this is rather spectacular. Let's see if I can get this in close enough that you can actually read it. And this is at the end of your written reading. So notice, that's Chiron, that's the sun, it's this yellow circle, and that's the moon. It looks like the moon. It's a gray crescent. Notice the number on all of those is exactly the same. 19 degrees, 24 minutes. That's impossible, but it's right there. It's right there. And not only is it a new moon, it is a total solar eclipse, and only the second one in American history that actually crosses the continent in some way. So this is de facto a peak moment of Chiron in Aries. It is de facto a peak moment in your journey of healing self-esteem. And I suggest you grab it. Whatever that's about. It is also about your relationship to money. It is about your relationship to your talents. It is about the intersection of your money and your talents. And it is about the value that you put upon yourself. One of my favorite passages from A Course in Miracles begins, "Every decision you make stems from what you think you are." And paraphrasing from this point, if you think that you are small and worthless, the decisions that you make are going to reflect that smallness and that sense of worthlessness. And if you have some sense of your meaning and purpose and grandeur, and I don't mean aggrandizement, I don't mean all this ego puff that goes on in the world and likes, clicks, and follows, and you know, did you make your first billion in under 2 years or whatever, the metrics of meaningfulness are. I mean your sense of purpose on the planet, which you've probably known since you were very young. And you may have known it when you were very young, and you forgot it when you got older, and you know, allowed a series of compromises to, in some way, take over your life. This is often what happens. This is a great moment of reclaiming. This is a moment of what you might think of as soul retrieval. And the story kind of enters its first peak with this April 8th eclipse in Aries. Built into that first peak is another event which is the conjunction of Mercury and Eris. And look at how close that is. Mercury, 24, Eris 24, and then these are just 3 arc minutes apart. That is a 20th of a degree. I mean, the full moon is only half a degree. So you'd have to cut that into, like, I don't know, 10 or 20 slices to see how close that conjunction is with Mercury retrograde at the time of the eclipse. When things happen simultaneously, they are multiplied by each other, not added by each other. And here's what I think that's about. I promised a spiritual media theory lesson. I'm finally getting to it. Aries is one of 2 major crime scenes of the digital revolution. It's one of 2 places where there is a major value loss. This value loss is in the form of fragmentation. If the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, the parts are not worth the whole. And what we're living through is this era of severe fragmentation by digital conditions, this radical disembodiment, this loss of the loss of sense of being, the loss of sense of belonging. And more importantly than anything, I think especially for you, is the loss of the internal sanctuary of who you are, that inviolable inner place, which is violated all the time as we are continuously exposed to nonstop, around the clock, digital conditions. And this environment that we're in right now is much better at promoting and amplifying and propelling fear, aggression, anger, guilt, and anxiety than it is at conveying the type of feeling, tone, and vibration that I am putting out to you now. It's not especially easy doing this staring into a camera, but I am willing to do it because I think that it is probably helpful to people, and I've really had to learn how to be here in front of a camera doing this. But mostly it's spreading fear and aggression. And you can see, you know, I'm on a lot of Substack lists, right? Substack is the new hot blog spot. Most of them are spreading fear, paranoia, fear of disease, conspiracies about the government, pain, anguish, and then a little bit of feel good. It's like the usual every now and then there's a cat video that comes along. The digital environment pushes us out of our bodies. It denudes the whole process of self-actualization when handled unconsciously. This is represented by Eris in Aries. This has been extant since 1922. Eris first touched Aries 101 years ago, at the time when the radio was the big innovation. And as part of its denuding the sense of what a person is on the interior, built through basically the previous millennia of humans learning to work with the alphabet and learning to read and being able to guide themselves inward with reading and to stoke the imagination inwardly, which is very important. I mean, this is what books do that movies don't. Books, and this is why I work in writing for the annuals, whenever I possibly can, almost every one of them, and then maybe present like this, the annual is much more, the written is much more private. Anything in book format is going to be much more interior and private. And things put on a screen are much more externalized. A lot of looking at screens. We do a lot of externalizing. And what all of this does is it takes us out of ourselves and it forms people into angry little mobs. Electrical tribes. Part of Chiron's presence in Aries is about driving and inspiring the need for wholeness, to set you on that quest for wholeness. I think ultimately Eris will have that purpose as well. We have a real moment of contact with Eris at this eclipse because the eclipse has Mercury, very solar planet, it is the planet of sentience, retrograde conjunct Eris. The fundamental question of that aspect is, what has happened to me? What can I do to claim myself back? What can I do to claim my wholeness? And for Pisces, Mercury is the planet of relationships because you have Virgo on the relationship cusp and Gemini on the family relationship cusp. And so the retrograde is like a question mark, Mercury. It is an interior focused quality. It has a way of compelling a review of the past. And anything involving retrograde Mercury can reveal your communication with yourself and your inner truth in a way that is quite astounding, that is highly awakening. So these are the two major events in Aries. There's a third thing going on. And if you will pardon my kind of experimental reading of this, because really reading involves a synthesis. It involves taking the parts and putting them together. And what I've done here with my nifty little woodless, I love these. I stopped making them. They're soft pencils without the wood. Is I've connected the events in Aries using these yellow lines to a point in Aries, in early Aries, called Slatia. And this is talking to three points in Capricorn, where Pluto has been for something like 16 years. And those three points are, four points, are in turn talking to a point called Logos in your eighth house in Libra. Eighth is a very important house of relationships. It is the conjugal bond of, how do I get my self here and have a little more room. The conjugal bond of relationships is in the eighth. It's where relationships are confirmed by contract, they are confirmed by sexual exchange, they're confirmed by the exchange of money, and usually all of the above makes the eighth house. The eighth is also about legacies and wills and money that comes to us by will. Logos is about communication in words and concrete ideas that can be put into writing, the word. The 11th work, Capricorn, is also a very important house of relationships because it's about social bonding. And this complicated little group, it wants to travel back in time in Capricorn. And I'm slowly figuring out what this is about with help from people who are suggesting some of the ancestral themes. And I think that one of the most important ancestral themes, besides the fact that it all takes place in Capricorn, is going beyond what you think you know about your family. Meaning, Pholus hinting that that's as far as your great-grandparents. Most people never meet their great-great-grandparents. Many people never meet their great-grandparents, but most people do know their grandparents, who heard stories of their great-grandparents, but never hear stories of your great great grandparents or beyond. And so the combination of factors in Capricorn, which has something to do with your place in the community, maybe I'm giving a kind of a identikit description here. Your place in the community is described by this open line coming in from the ancestors. And the implication is, the message is, go beyond what you think you know. Go beyond your understanding of who your great-grandparents were and go back into the origins of the tribe. This can be about something about visiting the old country, imagining who you would be. I don't know who I would be in Sicily. I can't imagine. I might be the same person. It might be a very different thing. I have more freedom in the United States than I probably would have in Sicily. My life requires I experiment with who I am. That would be much harder in Sicily. I've been there. Have you been back to the old country in any way? What do you know about these people? There was a wonderful series on PBS. I'm not the world's biggest PBS fan. And there was one episode had Roseanne Cash where they did real genealogy work. Like, they spent money doing real genealogical research, and the findings were astounding. Carol King was on, and it turns out that Klein is not really her family name by lineage. That's her actual, Carol Klein is her actual name, but rather the name of the people who bailed her parents or grandparents out of Ellis Island. That's how she got the name Klein, because somebody named Klein showed up with money and paid passage or whatever the fuck it was, and then she ended up Carol Klein, then became Carol King. This kind of thing, beyond the known of your family lineage, is going to tell you something about your place in society. Salacia. What is appropriate for you sexually? Well, that's interesting. That relates to how you connect to your community. It relates to how you connect to your partners by contract in some way. And so we have here this setup of, you have to know by these instructions. It's kind of a cosmic message of 2024. There is a relationship between some knowledge coming in, which may be intuitive, I don't know. It's a hard thing to describe. It's intangible. The people are not here anymore. Related to the specificity of your contracts, your agreements with people, as aligned with your sense of what is appropriate for you, especially around sexuality. And so one of the ways I'm reading this Logos Salacia opposition, with or without all this mystery stuff in Capricorn, is, oops, made that opposite the wrong planet, but it's going to get there soon enough. So you can ignore that top red line. The connection of Salacia to Logos is saying, you must communicate what's sexually appropriate for you. You must set the terms of the relationship, and that's it. You set the terms, which cannot include, I will make someone do something else. The terms generally must be set in terms of limits that you place, and articulated desires that you have, and then the rest is a matter of communication. Does everyone agree to the contract or not? But the need for specific limitations is crucial. Specific conditions. There's another element in your chart that's been talking about this long before I was on to the Salacia Logos thing, which is Trans Pluto, another one of these hypothetical planets in your seventh. And if you read through old annual editions, past few years especially, I've been talking about this topic of specificity, of not having general purpose relationships, one size fits all inclusive package, but rather having specific relationships. And this is a limiting factor. Trans-Pluto is a lot about understanding the purpose in a narrow way that kind of goes down the binoculars backwards as opposed to a view that brings things closer. So it's, the metaphor may work either way. But having specific agreements and understandings. And now's your time to do that. Now's a very good time to do that. And it will be very helpful to do that with the Saturn-Nessus conjunction coming up. And it's in effect now because we're talking about it now. It's very close now. It's going to be very close in the spring. Okay, another house. That was all by way of the second house. There's a lot to cover in a chart. They have a lot of information in them. And I use a lot of planets. But they're all old friends. I don't just randomly drop new things in that I haven't tested or work with in some way. How I get the experience is another thing, but I usually get the experience with mundane charts, interviewing people, and then doing my mythography of analysis. All right, third house. Big news in the third house. The third house for you is Taurus. Look at all that stuff going on in Taurus. I'll highlight in red Taurus. There's Taurus. And notice that in Taurus, there's the conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus, very important, and a planet called Albion. I'm not sure what I'm going to say about Albion, but I can tell you that Jupiter is the ruling planet of Pisces. Nessus is kind of exalted or affinity. It seems like Pisces, certainly convincing that watery planet is very Piscean in nature, and you've been overwhelmed with this now for 14 years, till 12, 14 years. Classical astrology, Jupiter. You want this. You want Jupiter to be your ruling planet more so than Neptune. Neptune is intangible. It is easily corrupted. Jupiter is solid. It is tangible. It is a microcosmos of its own. There's something like 70 natural satellites of Jupiter. Saturn has more. Jupiter is denser than Saturn, by the way, just saying. And it has a ring system. It's a very similar planet. They're almost twins. I think Saturn is much more dramatic to look at, but if I were going to go to any planet and like look at it up close, I would pick Jupiter. Rules Pisces. And in Taurus, this is your house of your state of mind. It is your house of your mentality, therefore it is your communication style. It is your preferred community style, solid, real, Taurus. Uranus has been there since this 2018-19 phase. Right when Chiron changed signs, Uranus changed signs. Chiron left Pisces, entered Aries. Uranus left Aries, entered Taurus. So Uranus by itself has a destabilizing quality. And it passed the square to Pluto. So the revolutionary thing going on in like 2011, 2012, that's, bought the t-shirt. There is now a stabilizing factor in your house of community. It's been there less than a year. That's Jupiter. It takes 1 year to go through a sign. Another thing that might seem like old news, except that the peak now comes at the end, in a very Chiron style. Like, we get there. And with where we get is the Jupiter conjunction to Uranus. And this takes place a mere 12 days, less than 2 weeks, after the solar eclipse in Aries. They are, from a timing standpoint and a synchronicity standpoint, they're basically one thing. And that one thing is a radical expansion and transformation of your potential and of your expressed abilities, the value of your talents. Your talents are in the second. The second of the second is the third. The third for you is Taurus. Your talents are contained in Aries, your worth, your and the second of the second is the third, and that is the House of Commerce, for example. If Aries is the sign of your talents, Taurus is where you sell them. Your value is on the ascendancy. Your value is rising, so you must know your value. And I would remind you that this is not some haughty thing. I'm worth $50 an hour. My name is so and so. I'm worth that. No, I mean your value to the people who you help. Your the what this crayon is worth. The less of them there are, the more they're worth. The less typical what you do is, combined with the better service it provides, the more it's worth. Get to know this. Get to learn this and work this. Again, this is not a button that you wear. It is something that comes from an internal understanding, and it also comes from the responses of the people whom you have assisted. And those people are going to be your community of commerce, community, COM, commerce. Communication, COM, COM, COM. The third house is the house of COM. Everything with COM is the third house. So this is the time to get your messaging right. It is the time to lay the tracks on which you will be moving your wares and further establishing yourself as a commodity. Again, COM, you commodify yourself in the third house. Either you commodify yourself for a bunch of furs or a bunch of milk or cows or candles, but what you create becomes commodified in the community of commerce of the third house. And in our world, that's about communicating. Jupiter conjunct Uranus is like the best thing that ever happened if you sell anything, if you proffer yourself in some way. It's absolutely amazing. And I suggest that you, from this minute forward, get your plans together. Figure it out. Get it together. Because there is kind of a boon coming. And that, I think, if I had to place a spiritual condition on that, the spiritual condition would be, well, do I hold myself in any esteem? Do I actually respect myself? Have I addressed my issues of confidence? At least if you have issues of confidence, say, I've got a confidence issue to the people around you. Talk to the people around you and say, look, I've got a confidence issue. Most of it will go away if you say you've got a confidence issue. People will help you if you say you have a confidence issue. They will reassure you, but true confidence comes from inside of you and is learned in from experience. I mean, that's it. I've read that. I'm not sure this is true, but I've read that both Barbra Streisand and Bob Dylan had a way of puking before they could go out on stage. They were so nervous. You think, fucking hey, Bob Dylan, Barbra Streisand, these people, they know their talent. Well, still very nervous. So nervous is part of it. Next house, fourth house. We're almost done here. We're gonna get to the two. We're gonna get to Pluto in the very end. We'll come up to that very briefly. Fourth house is your home. Jupiter's coming. You have 1 year of Jupiter in Gemini, Jupiter in the solar fourth. Improve your living space. That's what that's about. It may mean a voluntary transition to a better place. I would say get on this. Get on it. Do whatever you have to do to improve your physical living situation. It's also about family. Family is a concept that has changed. There are some very traditional families. I happen to know some that are very close, very close-knit, no divorces. I know many families, there's been many divorces and many remarriages and many kids by many fathers. I don't know what your family situation is. But whatever it is, the physical dwelling that you all live in, or that you personally live in, you get an opportunity to upgrade with Jupiter and Gemini. Sedna is coming too. I'm not so sure about Sedna in the fourth, but Sedna is an environmental issue. Sedna describes environmental issues, and Sedna, which has not changed science from Taurus to Gemini for 11,400 years ago, right around when where I'm sitting right now is underneath a mile thick glacier. That's a lot of ice. Your home environment is very important. Gemini describes your mental environment as much as anything else. So your home environment and your mental environment are in an overlay. I'm personally getting an experience of Jupiter in the fourth by being in this lovely cottage, absolutely perfectly suited to who I am and what I do, with the exception of maybe needing like a shed or a nearby barn or something to, and I could probably make an art studio work in this in this building as well. I'm getting older and scaling back. Look for experiences that teach you what you want. That could say, I noticed immediately, I came into this building last night about 4 o'clock, the design is incredible. There's a little loft overhead, there's a loft bedroom there, there's a living room here, dining room here, kitchen there, nice size kitchen, extra bedroom, 2 bathrooms, holy shit, this little cottage is a work of genius. Missing experience for me, I've got an idea. From here, stolen from Ed, the host, who designed it. The first thing I said was, where did this building come from? Is it a kit? No, I designed it. That's important knowledge, that type of knowledge, having something to aspire to. Okay, while we're going here, I'm not setting time limits on these readings, so looking at that little timer there, we're a minute, an hour and two. Fifth house, very briefly, there is powerful activity in your fifth house of creativity. This is the sign Cancer. I have not said much in these readings about the sign change of Asbolus and the sign change of chaos. Chaos, not pandemonium chaos. Chaos, the prime creation goddess of the Greeks. Wow, that's a cool thing. To come to your fifth house, along with Asbolus, a centaur. And the message of Asbolus is that which all life has in common. The name Asbolus means carbon dust. I believe it was the fourth or the fifth centaur, with Periclo being either the fourth or the fifth. I think it went Chiron, Pholus, Nessus, Asbolus, Periclo, or the first five. You don't really need any more. 5 centaurs, that's pretty good. But chaos is entering, chaos not a centaur, chaos is way out on the edge. Prime creation goddess entering the fifth, art, pleasure, love, fun, play. Prime creation, followed by Asbolus, centaur, number 4, related to survival. Marshall McLuhan's theory is that to survive in an environment of total chaos, You must be a probe, and you must do the most important thing that an artist does, which is to be a master of pattern recognition. That's my reading on the combination of chaos entering your fifth, along with Asbolus entering your fifth. The artist remains open. The artist remains open to internal reality, external reality, and creation, and it's the only thing that makes passage in the digital environment safe. The fact that you would take these tools and not be churning out links to people and bullshit and taco photos, but taking some risk and doing something really creative that you're not sure how people are going to respond to it. That's Asbolus, chaos, fifth. Okay, You've just lived through Acevalos, Chiron, excuse me, Pluto in Capricorn. Pluto in Capricorn has vastly reshaped your social environment. You may wonder where it all went. A lot of our social environments got eaten by the 2020 crisis, which took place in your most social house, that house being 11 Capricorn. You may have felt the demolition of the social environment based on the 2020 crisis and then the 2021 inject poison or you can't go anywhere crisis more poignantly than anyone. You're sensitive, generally. You also depend on structured social bonds. That's Capricorn in the 11th. You depend on long-term structured social bonds. Pluto in Capricorn has done a number on that. Pluto conjunct Saturn in Capricorn has done a number on that. Saturn in Capricorn did a number on that. And now Pluto is leaving Capricorn for good this year. A couple of days from now, on the 20th, exit 1, November 19th, after a very brief return to Capricorn, exit 2. So now you have clear space to work with. You get to redefine your concept of social. And I suggest you do this consciously. Now, Pluto's moving into your 12th place, Aquarius. It's very difficult to say what that's going to be about. But the 12th for you is also social because you have Aquarius there. Everything's off by just one bump with Pisces, where you have the 11th sign in your 12th house and the 12th sign in your first house and the first sign in your second house, right? So that's interesting, right? So it means that there's a lot of symmetry to your chart and a kind of a rhyme and reason to things. It's easy to follow. And one thing about Pluto and Aquarius is that your social milieu is something you contain deep within you. It's not really an external thing when you have Aquarius in the 12th place. And Pluto is going to redefine that. And Pluto is going to take you deep into yourself in ways that are not appropriate to share with many people. And then there may be occasions where something unusual happens and you decide that something very deep within you is appropriate to share with many people. And this may be a function of the creative exploration and the daring sense of creativity that will that is part of this whole journey, especially with the fifth, all of this stuff going on in all of these houses is so tremendous. It's going to provide an incredible amount of creative energy, ideas, the need to express yourself. And then Pluto is taking you deep into this inner reality where you must learn about yourself, where you're going to be compelled to explore interior reality in a whole new way. And really, actually, this is the best thing that can happen in the digital age, because the digital age is so obsessed with what everyone's spewing out in all directions and cares so little about what people are actually feeling inside, because you can't fucking tweet it. You can't tweet it. There's no way to actually express the deep, inner, mysterious process of becoming human. Why you would want to relate to people at all. What is the constellation, what is the family constellation and the social constellation that you contain? What would be your ideal state of a social constellation? This would be a fabulous exercise. I should do it. I've never thought it through. What would really be my ideal state? It would probably resemble, some part of it would resemble Camp Onus. Some part by Quaker summer camp. Some part of it would resemble my high school as a fabulous social scene. I don't know. Let me experiment with that. I've got a lot of Pisces. But Pluto, the kind of inherent built-in contradiction of Pluto in Aquarius for you is that it is shifting the social environment by shifting something inside of you. And there are likely to be some tremendous ideas that come out of this, and the recognition of certain tremendous necessities. Apropos of that, I would say, well, this house could be bigger, but if how many people do I really want to have over? Like, what's the ideal number of people? And at some point, oh, well, a party of 50 people might have seemed exciting. Right now, having 10 people over would seem like a lot of people. Having 3 people over would seem like a lot of people. 2 people would seem like a lot of people. So where are you at with that? Like, you know, what are your needs? And as you make your decisions about the home environment, Sedna, Jupiter entering the 4th home, what are your social needs? It may be better to overplan, you know, a little bit, you know, a couple of extra square feet for that. So I'm not sure the point of synthesis here, what the kind of binding theme of all of this is, because both the Sedna transit and the Pluto transit are inherently, you know, interior to your space and to your awareness. First house, that's pretty interior. Pisces, second house, that's a deep interior shift. Third house starts to get you into the community, expanding your role. I would say that however brilliant your ideas are, however good you get at offering what you have, the prevailing message of both Sedna and Pluto, the really long-term transits, 20 years and then out to 2066 with Sedna, is keep your internal orientation. Keep remembering who you are, no matter what else happens. Remember who you are. And as Joni Mitchell said, I'm not sure who I am, but life is for learning. And then she completed that stanza saying, we are stardust, we are golden, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. So what's your garden? Where is your garden? On that note, I leave you. Happy to entertain questions. I would prefer if you left them on the Planet Waves version of this rather than, you know, on the YouTube version. Right below the embedded video on the Planet Waves page is comment area, your login. You should be able to see it. Thank you for your business and your trust. Bye for now.